And our special guest this hour, George Haas, as we talk about his work on Cydonia and other regions of Mars. We're going to take calls with him, too, when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with George Haas. We're going to get to your calls, too, in just a second. George, was it difficult to get published in the Journal of Space Exploration?
Well, we submitted the paper early in the year. It went through review. They sent it back. We made some changes. It went pretty smooth.
Did it surprise you?
Not really, because we were very confident that this the crown face is a unique formation. Most people, when you show it to them, they see the face right off, you know, right off the bat.
Oh, they sure do. Yeah.
Especially when they stand back from the screen, it's like, you know, most people like their mouths open. And I did some conferences early on when we were promoting our first two books. And we always had this image sitting on the table, and people would go by, and it would stop people. I mean, we didn't have anything in our books with that in there, but this crown face was always a crowd stopper, I'll tell you. And so we were pretty confident that once we had these two images from the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter that, you know, we could get it published.
Well, you know what did it for me? The eyeballs. The eyeballs did it to me.
Well, there's a lot of detail, especially with that center face. The interesting thing is, you know, people say, well, why would somebody build this? You know, why would you build a portrait?
Well, you know, they did Mount Rushmore. Look at the look what they did in Peru with the Nazca lines.
A sliced partial face.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if the listeners are aware that in 2014, right here in Washington, D.C., the capital, there was a contemporary artist that does geoglyphs, and he calls them facescapes. His name is George Rodriguez. And he's very famous. He does these portraits all over the world. And he did one right here in Washington, D.C., between the National, right at the National Mall, between the Lincoln Memorial and the World War II Memorial. He's a Cuban-American artist, and he did this huge, giant, 900-foot-long portrait. And what he had done is he went around the Washington, D.C. area, and he took photographs of minority people and foreign people, anybody that was in the area of Washington, D.C., and through a computer program, he put all these faces together and created one face. And he called this artwork Out of Many One. And if viewers out there or the listeners have access to their computers and go to the Coast to Coast page and look at image E, I have a picture, an aerial view of this National Mall portrait. Out of Many One by George Rodriguez. And it's a very, you know, you look at this and right off you could see that this is a portrait. Have you seen this, George?
Yeah, I sure have. Been looking.
And it's kind of odd. It kind of looks like he's peeking around the corner there. He's obscured, you know, half of his face and on the side there with the tree shadows.
Yeah, and he doesn't look happy either.
No, it's a very stern face.
Yeah.
He's looking right at you. The interesting thing is I didn't add anything here because of the, you know, limited amount of space and time. But if anybody out there wants to Google Out of Many One, there's all types of images showing actually the men on the ground that are doing these. You see the almost like the line, the shadows, the drawing around the face. That's all done in dirt. They brought in all different colored dirt and put this down there. The whole top of the head is just, you know, black dirt up there. There's really no detail, but when you look at it, you see it's a portrait. It has form to it. It has shape. It's very interesting. You know, there's only one eye. There's the nose is cut off. You can see the mouth, and the chin goes down to the bottom there. And even the eye, when I have in my computer files here, close-ups of that eye, very abstract. When you look at it, like people say, well, we have to get higher resolution pictures so we can zoom in there and see what these things are. If you zoom in on that eye, it doesn't even look like an eye. It's all abstract because it's all done with lines and cross-hatchings and things like that. It's remarkable. And if the viewers or the readers or whatever you want to call yourselves out there, the listening area to Coast, just scroll down to image F. And what I've done there is I just cropped out the portrait of the generic face produced by George Rodriguez. And I sliced out the center face from the crown face. And those two side by side is pretty striking.
I want you to speculate for a moment, if you would, George. And if I'm reading you right, I'm sensing that you are more of a believer in the after the catastrophe visitation to Mars.
Yeah, that's
or
the camp
or the
I would
building.
Be in. Yes.
Okay. So give me your speculation from the moment of the catastrophe, what you think that might have been, to then what probably happened, how long it took. And I know it's speculation, but paint us a picture of what you think happened.
Well, we can have fun. I think after this war that went on Mars, now, I don't know if this war was between an indigenous people that were on Mars that were warring, like, you know, people are always worried that, you know, United States and Russia in the 80s.
And China,
the nuclear war and destroy everything. You know, or Iran getting the, you know, access to nuclear mm-hmm. weapons. I mean, this could happen.
This could happen.
It's a reality. You know, it's not something that, it's not a fantasy. I mean, we know that we can blow ourselves up pretty good. And it appears that it was either an indigenous war or, as Dr. Brandenburg speculates, he believes that this might have been a visitor's, some other ET that had contact with
them. Just came and took them out.
Right, took them out. And he thinks it has. This is like a trend of any time a civilization gets to a certain point, this group of do-gooders come around and they take them out. That's why we don't get any radio signals or any signs of any other contact out there, because as soon as a planet or a people or some type of species gets to a point where they're going to be space travelers and creating massive weapons, they're taken out. Once the planet was destroyed, if there was this battle going on where there was a war, I believe it was probably an indigenous conflict. And
With high technology.
With high technologies, like Charlton Heston in The Planet of the Apes, you know, he's smashing his fist on the beach there, you know. This is what happened on Mars. And the survivors, or the victors, came to Earth. And, you know, the first thing they had to do was, you know, destroy all the dinosaurs, so that's why they all disappeared.
Uh-huh.
To make it a safe place to live. And they brought culture here and whatever, DNA, or as the Sumerians talk about, you know, the Anunnaki coming to Earth and doing experiments with the local wild beast, you know, the man beast, creating us. So it could be part of those stories could be overlapping. And I think when they came here, they started a new civilization. And once the dust settled on Mars, they probably still had space capabilities. They went back there and they put all of these pictographs and geoglyphs up there as a record of what happened in the history of man, which falls in line with what I've learned with Mesoamerican culture, where the Popol Vuh talks about the creator gods, that they had the book that was written, and its site was hidden from the searcher and the thinker. And Bill and I early on speculated that all these things we're finding on Mars are this hidden book that the creators or the victors from Mars, when they came to Earth, went back there and left all these structures up there. So sometime in the future, when we were a spacefaring culture, we could go out there and see these things. And that's what we're finding now. And it's the reason that they're so familiar, and you look at the crown face, and it looks like a woman on the one side and almost like a werewolfy guy in the middle, and the other person on the other end is has these butterfly things coming off her head and stuff. They're just telling a story about the creation mythology, and it has to do with us.
And with this technology, do you think, again, though, that you're saying that a civilization came here, obliterated whatever was on Mars?
Right.
And you know, hence that was it for them.
The atmosphere that's gone, so there was nothing there.
And they may have had a way to do that, to get rid of the atmosphere too, and kill off everything.
Right.
Scary, isn't it?
So it's basically a dead planet. I think they might. I mean, they found brine water on Mars. I'm sure sooner or later we're going to find out there's some type of microbial life.
I think so
on Mars.
Too.
But I don't think there's any creatures running around there like some people think. That's just craziness.
Yeah, if there are, they're probably insect type.
I would agree with that. Yes, very small.
Worms, something like that.
Yeah, or you know, cockroaches.
Yeah,
seem to survive everywhere.
You step on them and they still survive. Jeez.
And my wife, being a veterinarian, she did some study with some of the radiation out of the Trinity site when she was in college down in Tennessee. And one of the most resilient animals is the chicken.
Really?
Oh yeah, they'll survive all kinds of high.
I did not know that.
Radiation. So if there's any kind of catastrophe, she says, don't eat the chicken's eggs.
All right, let's go to some of the calls, and we'll take more calls after the break. We go to Paul in Seattle. Welcome to Coast to Coast. Paul, Merry Christmas to you, sir.
Well, Merry Christmas, George. Like I say, don't call me sir. I work for a living. But anyway, seriously, I just want to mention a comment. In the ancient text of the Bible, in the book of Obadiah, in the first chapter, God is talking, and he's talking to the people of Edom, and he says, though you soar like an eagle and make your nest in the stars, I will bring you down from there. And so, you know, we've talked on Coast to Coast before about ancient civilizations, and I just would like to hear a comment, if it's possible, that we've been to Mars, and like you said, George, you know, all these structures in Egypt. If we've been to Mars, and that's possible that we made those. And I'll take my answer off the air, and Merry Christmas again.
You too. I don't know if we can rule that out, George. There's always been that theory that ancient earthbound civilizations went to the moon. Maybe they did go to Mars.
Right. Well, whoever destroyed Mars came here, and they probably settled on the moon also. You know, the moon would be a great place to do a staging area because, you know, with the low gravity, you could just go back and forth from the moon to Mars, you know, from the moon to Earth, you know, to set up your civilization. And all these structures that I guess was his name, Paul, was talking about,
pyramidal
things on Mars, probably were built by, you know, our ancient relatives.
Probably so.
Makes sense to me.
But, I mean, do you think it's possible that Earthlings went to Mars and did that?
Oh, a different scenario where the original culture started on Earth and they
started here and went there.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know how old our species is.
No. I mean, if you listen to Michael Cremo, we could be hundreds of millions of years
right.
old.
Right. So if Earth was the, you know, the birth planet where everybody started from, I mean, of course we could have elevated our culture to a time where we could have gone to Mars and colonized that planet, and, you know, that could have caused the problem. You know,
it would be
the United States leaving Britain, you know, and having a revolutionary war and, you know, starting our own planet.
Do you think NASA would allow astronauts, assuming we get to Mars, to tell us what they see? Let's assume they look at crashed, as you were talking about, crashed craft and machinery and things like that. Do you think they would absolutely let and permit astronauts to say, hey, look what's happening, and we would know about it?
No, I wouldn't, because I think some of the Apollo astronauts saw stuff on the moon that they don't want to talk about.
And it might have scared
them,
too.
Areas of the moon are probably littered with this debris, just like we're seeing on Mars. And if you just look at the rovers that are going around, you know, if they see a rock in the distance that they think the geologists think is interesting, they'll drive up close to it and they'll send a little tester out there and they'll drill it and they'll get a little sample. But if you see something in the distance that looks like, you know, an old 57 Chevy engine that's sitting there, they don't even go close to that at all. We're just stuck with the low-res images.
Let's go to Darren in St. Louis, east of the Rockies. What weather we've been having, Darren, huh?
Yes, how are you, George? How are you doing?
Great.
Hey, I just got a quick comment. I was just reading Zechariah Sitchin's book. Well,
okay.
I know you're familiar with the Lost Book of Enki.
Yes.
And from the fourth Sumerian tablet from the Lost Book of Enki, it says, and I quote, "In the great rock, a cave I found, Alalu's corpse, there I hid. In its entrance, I covered with stones, so Anzu was saying to them, they fallen into the rock, the stones they removed, the cave they entered. Inside of what Alalu remained, they found. He once a Nibiru king was a pile of bones, was in a cave now lying. For the first time in our annals, a king, not a Nibiru, has died. Not a Nibiru, he was buried. So Ninma said, Let him in peace for eternity rest. She was saying, they, the cave's entrance, again, they covered with stone. And then here's the important part. The image of Alalu upon the great rock mountain with beams they've carved.
Uh-huh.
They showed him wearing an eagle's helmet, his face they made uncovered. She said, let the image of Alalu forever gaze towards Nibiru that he ruled and toward the earth whose gold he discovered. And it goes on.
I love that.
And then also later in the Lost Book of Enki, it talks about the destruction of the Martian atmosphere. And then one of these circuits of Nibiru created a gravitational disturbance, and both Mars, the moon, and Earth at what time was cratered. They said it destroyed the atmosphere on Mars, cratered the moon, and then there's a sentence that says, and then that's when the ice began to melt. It didn't destroy the Earth atmosphere, but it says, but that's when the ice began to melt.
All done by the work of the late Zachariah Sitchin. What do you think of that, George?
Well, I'm a big fan of Zachariah Sitchin. A lot of hidden history is mentioned in the Sumerian text. Originally, archaeologists, they looked at all of the Sumerian text as, you know, just mythology and, you know, fantasy. But when you're finding, you know, structures on Mars, they may hold some of the answers to how they got there.
There's just so many wonderful things out there in the universe. We just don't know.
Nope.
I mean, it's just truly, truly remarkable. We're going to take some more calls, but before we do, I want you, George, to tell folks where they can get some of your works, your books, and your DVD, The Mars Codex.
Well, if the listeners are out there and have access to a computer, you can Google. Our first book is The Sidonia Codex, which is available on our website, the Sidonia Institute, or you can order it through Amazon.com. We also have our second book, The Martian Codex, which is also available on our website, the Sidonia Institute, or through Amazon. And I think last year or 2 years ago, William Saunders and I, my co-author, we put together a small documentary, which was accumulation of some of the works that we have done in our books, and we put out this short DVD documentary about our discoveries, which is called The Mars Codex, and that's available on the Mars Codex website.
Great.
And also through Amazon.com, they carry that also. So
you enjoy doing this, I can tell.
Well, I do. My attraction to this is all of the artistic formations that we're finding, you know, because my background being a sculptor and an artist, I exhibited up in New York. I had a one-man show at the O.K. Harris Gallery in New York and did a lot of exhibiting in the 80s and East Village and things like that. So, you know, I know structure when I see it, and I know art when I see it. And,
yeah.
And Mars is full of structure and full of art.
Stay with us, George. We're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM, and we're going to take some final phone calls. Next hour, Joshua P. Warren joins us talking about Ghosts of Christmas. We will be back. And welcome back. George Haas with us. We'll get to your calls as well, the final calls in this segment. Fascinating work, Mars, and what may have happened there. What about Venus, George? Do you think it might have suffered the same fate as Mars, or is it just too close to our sun?
Well, it's a pretty hot planet, so I don't know if life as we know it could have evolved there.
But it is a hot planet.
The surface is pretty tattered, so it's been hit by a lot of meteors. But as for any sign of any type of advanced structures or formations on there, I haven't seen any. I've looked at numerous surface photographs of that planet, but I haven't seen anything like we're seeing on Mars.
Incredible old stories, by the way. Frank Stranges, who wrote a book about Stranger at the Pentagon, claims that a fellow by the name of Valiant Thor, who came from Venus, visited us, had meetings with the White House and the Joint Chiefs, and we turned him down in terms of the technology he offered us because, you know, a lot of it would have been free to people, and they decided to back off on that. But a friend of mine, Craig Campobasso, who did a film on that, claims that Valiant Thor is still on this planet.
Oh, really?
God, I'd love to interview him, wouldn't you? That would be fun.
Well, how old is he? Wasn't that in the 60s?
Exactly, but apparently his age process is very slow. That was way back, way back. But let's go to the calls.
Interstellar travel will do that to you.
You got that right. Jeff is in the upstate New York, first-time caller. Hi, Jeff. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, George. Hey, good to talk with you, and Merry Christmas.
You too, Jeff.
And you also, Mr. Haas. Hey,
Merry Christmas to you, too.
I took a look at the pictures that you posted there, especially the features look like they cover quite a large area, like you talked about. That's quite striking. I thought I'd just mention that, and just to kind of see if you'd pique your interest, that there's a face on Earth. If you'd heard of any faces on Earth, I came across one looking back a couple of years ago using Google Maps. It's down in South Africa.
Okay. How big? How big's the structure? Pretty good?
It's basically two hills. So I'd say, roughly about a couple square miles.
And what does it look like, Jeff?
It looks like the head of a pharaoh. There's head and shoulders.
Wow.
It's strikingly symmetrical. And just, I my jaw dropped when I came across it and was looking at it about 2,000 foot altitude. You can set your view height to various altitudes, and when you set it for about 2,000 feet, it just pops right out, and it's amazing.
Could you send that picture to my webmaster, Lex?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
just sure at lex@coasttocoastam.com.
Yeah, Jeff, I'd like you to send that over to the Sidonia Institute also. Our email address is available right on our website there.
All right, yeah, we'd be happy to do that. I was in email contact with Michael Tellinger, who's down in around the Johannesburg area, and showed him that, and he was quite interested.
Well, people are finding geoglyphs all over the planet now with Google. There's a couple years ago over in Russia, they found this big geoglyph of a it looked like an elk, a moose, and they just found a few more geoglyphs down in Peru, in the Nazca lines there. So, people are finding these things all the time. So this may be a real valid discovery that you have there.
Well, you got to tip your hat to Eric von Däniken, who did this in the 60s with minimal technology.
Right.
Let's go to Bill, West Hartford, Connecticut. He's our amateur astronomer.
Yes. Hi, George.
Hey, Bill.
Hi, George. And happy holidays and happy New Year to both of you.
You too.
George, as you said, I am an amateur astronomer, the other George. I am an amateur astronomer, and I know a little bit of astrogeology as well. And I'd like to bring some hard science reasoning into why I agree with you totally, and I agree with Richard C. Hoagland totally, that the face on Mars is artificial. And the reason is, first of all, the face itself, we need really, I wish NASA would do this, give a dozen or more photos from different lighting angles, the sun from the east, the sun from the west, from looking straight down, very close, far away. So you have 10, 20, 12, 24, 25 photos of different close up as well as far away and stereo. That way we would know for sure. Having said that, the reason why I agree that the face is real, it's not the face itself. If you look at the Viking photo, which of course you have, assuming the top of the face is due north, I'm going to assume it's due north, I would say northeast of the face, to the right and slightly above the face, which convinces me, not the face itself, but it convinces me that there's artificiality involved, is two things very simply, A and B. A, approximately a 500-foot small tetrahedral five-sided pyramid that's located right on the rim of a mile or a mile and a half crater, and B, right near that crater, about a half a mile away from the crater, on top of debris field from that crater, is a wall. And since the debris is only on one side of the wall and not on the other, meaning that if the wall was there first naturally, the debris would have gone over the wall to the other side, not only did that wall have to have been built artificially by an intelligence on top of that debris, but the five-sided small tetrahedral pyramid, well, it's five-sided, not a pyramid, five-sided object, on the rim of the crater could never form naturally. That had to have been built as well. Mm-hmm. So since those two things, looking from a geology point of view, are artificial, yes, I agree the face is artificial. Would you comment?
Well, I think what you're talking about, the wall, is what I think Carlotto or Hoagland called the cliff. And there's that crater that has that structure on the rim. And there's a lot of anomalies, just the structures. I mean, even the face on Mars, just forget that people are seeing a face. Just the foundation of the face is symmetrical, the foundation that it's sitting on, the basically the mesa.
Right.
Or the butte.
I call it the base.
Right, the base is very symmetrical, and there's some other structures. One of the famous structures called the Key, which is on the other side. I guess it's more of the eastern side, away from the face. It's a flat tabletop formation, right next to this formation called the Key. And geologically, they just don't go together. It's like, how can you have one flat top mesa structure sitting next to another structure that has all this unique structure and all this formations going on into the surface right next to something that's completely flat. It's just, you know, geologically, these are big questions. Like you're saying, you know, how do you have this crater with the this five-sided pyramidal structure sitting on the rim? It doesn't make sense.
I wonder what kind of festive moment they had, George, when they finished constructing that face. You know,
well, they seem to be building a lot of stuff. the face on Mars is amazing, especially with its the bifurcated aspect with the feline and the
and there's teeth too, right?
In the Mars reconnaissance, the high rise image, I don't see much evidence of any teeth, but there's a lot of evidence of structure. You know, the eye. A lot of people try to diminish the importance of all these, like this gentleman on the phone, you know, wanted them to take multiple pictures of the face on Mars so we would have different lighting.
Sure.
They seem to take most of their pictures are taking the overhead shots of the face on Mars are all coming in from the western side, catching the humanoid side. We don't get many coming in from the other side. So even though the small pool of images that we have, there's not a lot of variety in them. They're all basically, when they do take newer images, they're basically the same shot. But all of these images do verify all the formations, the bifurcated aspect that Hoagland had seen early on. You know, the more pictures they take, it just keeps verifying the feline-human aspect that he had originally seen with the very poor Viking images.
Let's go to William in Hayward, California now. Welcome to the program, William.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Anyways, so Merry Christmas to you. But I want to get to the main point of the issue at hand is just that this is an extraterrestrial event, and I believe that most of the things are related to the past, relating to the Bermuda Triangle, because I believe that due to the people missing and due to the stories that I heard from William Cooper, I don't know if you remember.
Oh, I remember him. He got shot in a police fight.
Yes. And the whole thing of it is just that everything that he ever stated was actually accurate. I mean, he even talked about photos of Mars, also to what NASA had, but they had to use special machines and stuff to enhance the photos to actually get clear pictures and stuff of actually what they're viewing and stuff. But I cannot trust our space program because we are only being told what to believe and what we're supposed to see when we're actually stuck here on this earth, not able to see what truthfully is out there and stuff. And the only thing we can do is make good hypotheses to basically come to a logical conclusion to all this madness. But the only thing I would have to say that has to relate to all this is basically the sons of God, otherwise known as the Nephilim and stuff, of Satan's crew. And relating to that subject is just that hopefully we might have some insight and stuff in the near future when hopefully biblical prophecy happens and stuff, where Satan, you know, falsifies his thing as being as God, lands nearby the Mount of Olives in a UFO, and that's basically when the mark of the beast falls in, where no man can buy or sell. But during this time period, you have the two witnesses that know the truth about this man as well as God's elect.
Well, all this could happen, William, indeed. I don't know if you ever look at the book of Revelation, George, but some of it is tied into some of the things we've been talking about.
Oh, yeah. Revelation may be, you know, a recorded history of what Dr. Brandenburg's talking about.
That's exactly right.
You know, we may be reading the revelation about a prophecy of something that was going to happen, that could happen, but this actually may be just a written record of
something that did happen.
Exactly.
Joe in the Bronx. Hey, Joe, go ahead.
George, Merry Christmas.
You too.
And
you
Merry
too.
Christmas to your guests.
You're going
to
be with us over the two holiday nights?
Yes, I will.
Excellent.
Yes, definitely. You know, looking forward to it.
You too.
And I wanted to ask your guest if there has been any specimen or sampling of soil around in or near the face on Mars, and is there a way that they can date it?
We have not gone there yet with rovers.
No, we haven't been anywhere near Cydonia to get any samples.
No.
But they've done some testing, you know, with the rovers that running around the surface now, but nothing around the Cydonia area.
It's almost like they're trying to avoid that area.
Well, the original Viking was supposed to land in Cydonia, and then they stopped that destination, and they went over to Utopia.
Mike is in West Palm Beach now, Florida. Hello, Mike. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi.
Hi there.
Your guess is correct that there is or was an advanced civilization on Mars, but for the wrong reasons. The pictures you're identifying are made up in a studio, completely phony by NASA. Now, I can prove this very easily.
Okay.
If you Google the following, the canals of Mars, 1962, there's a U.S. Air Force map published in that year of the canals of Mars. Now, one of the canals, so 60 years before that, they saw straight lines crisscrossing the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Scientists called them canals because they thought it brought water from the polar areas to the rest of the planet. Another issue were the colors of Mars. Before 1965, when the first satellite went past, when astronomers published pictures of Mars, it was green with a blue atmosphere with clouds. They actually photographed this from the Earth. That's all been suppressed. But I agree with you. There was an advanced civilization there. Everything else I say, but you're looking at it the wrong way because you believe what NASA's publishing, that these phony pictures made in a studio, has to be made in a studio or in the deserts of the Southwest or something, supposed to be the real Mars. It's not the real Mars. Mars is not a red planet. It's not a dead planet. It's a live planet with a blue atmosphere, and turns green each year with vegetation. And that's a fact, and you can document this. I have stuff from the 50s, pictures of this from astronomers. This has all been kept quiet.
There were a lot of people, George.
Hello?
A lot of people, George, believe, like Mike does, that it is a live planet.
Well, I have a telescope, and I've looked at Mars, and it doesn't look to be a green planet through my telescope.
Did you see that one photograph that looks like a bunch of trees down below?
The one that Arthur C. Clarke commented on?
Is that the one?
Yeah, the banyan trees?
Banyan trees, that's right.
Yeah, they were very interesting. But NASA went out of their way to wait until the wintertime to take new pictures of that area. and they looked like they were dead trees.
But trees nonetheless, right?
Yeah, but it's they're very interesting photographs, but it would be like someone visiting Earth and looking at my sycamore tree out here.
Right.
In August.
Yeah, but at least the sycamore tree is there.
Taking a photograph of my huge sycamore tree.
Yeah,
out
but George,
looks like a tree.
But it is a tree.
Right, but wait, George, and then coming back in the mid of winter when there's no leaves on it, and
right,
it just looks like a skeleton, and then take a picture of that and say, "See, that was just an illusion that you saw last time."
So you're saying that they're doing that on purpose?
If you look at the two pictures, the original picture looks like it's a full blown
forest.
Something's very puffy.
Looks like a little forest down there.
Right. And then they look at the pictures they took years later, which were during the winter time. They look like they're dead.
Yes. Exactly. Like the leaves fell
but
off.
They're
or
not
whatever.
Taken in the same season.
No.
The original pictures.
Do you think
so that's
there are
how NASA kind of got around, you know, trying to destroy that interest, saying that, oh, look, we took these new pictures and it was just a trick of light.
So you don't believe everything NASA hands us?
No, I believe those two pictures are probably correct, but one is, you know, a dead tree, you know, in the wintertime, and the other one is, you know, the middle of the spring or summer, and it's looking great.
And, well, the exciting part about it is it's a tree. Hey, George, thank you so much. Have a great Christmas. Good luck with everything you do. You're always welcome back here on Coast to Coast AM. Next up, The Ghosts of Christmas with Joshua P. Warren.